Deutsche Welle, Living Planet.
From DW Studios in Bonn, this is Living Planet, and I'm Charlotte Lomas. Coming up on the show, solving Lebanon's water crisis, is the construction of a massive dam worth the risk?
Any attempt to drill or dig in this area will allow water to run in the cracks. Research suggests that water leaking into these cracks could potentially lead to further earthquakes, which would destroy all the villages. People will die in thousands.
The Dead Sea is disappearing at an alarming rate.
So we lose even more water as the level of the Dead Sea drops because the water table is also dropping with it all along the Jordan Valley.
Could a new pipeline project help save it from drying out? Plus, what's killing so many dolphins in the Black Sea? That's coming up. Stay tuned. The Middle East is the most water-scarce region in the world, where the demand for water exceeds what's available. Lebanon, in particular, is facing a dire situation. According to the World Bank, the small country on the East Mediterranean coast only stores 6% of its total water resources, compared to an average of 85% in other Arab countries. A combination of drought and the mismanagement of groundwater reserves is mostly to blame for the crisis. As a solution to the water shortages in the capital Beirut and its surroundings, the World Bank is financing the construction of an important dam. But locals think environmental damage and even the risk of it causing earthquakes will outweigh its benefits. Suniva Rose reports from Beirut.
Bisri, just 35 kilometres south from the Lebanese capital Beirut, is a deep 10-kilometre-long valley. At its base, along the Bisri River, are Roman ruins, ancient churches, as well as 30-metre-tall trees and lush green pastures. But like much of Lebanon, the hills that surround the Bisri Valley reveal the scars of earthquakes past. Locals still recall the devastating effects of the 1956 earthquake. It killed 135 people.
Between this and this mountain, these houses in the middle, there's a fault line. That's why locals don't build on this plain, because any house here would be destroyed.
That's Amer Mashmushi. He's a Bisri landowner and a civil engineer. He's driving me around Bisri, and we stop at a village just above the valley on what he says is an old landslide. Mashmushi finds it puzzling why the government would choose this site on which to build a massive dam.
Any attempt to drill or dig in this area will allow water to run in the cracks. Research suggests that water leaking into these cracks could potentially lead to further earthquakes, which would destroy all the villages. People will die in thousands.
Construction of the dam is planned for the end of 2017. It's expected to cost $617 million, which is 518 million euros. The World Bank is lending Lebanon $474 million, and the rest will be covered by the Islamic Development Bank and the Lebanese government. The proposed dam's walls will measure 70 meters high, and some 400 hectares of land will be inundated, including ruins that span several civilizations from the Phoenicians to the Romans. Our next stop is by the Bisri River.
This is from the temple.
There are four granite columns by its bank that used to support a Roman temple. And Mashmushi points to the foundations scattered nearby. The government body that's overseeing the construction of the dam, which is called the Council for Development and Reconstruction, plans to excavate and relocate the ruins, but locals are not convinced.
Look, the temple was here. Here are the pillars, and here are the bases of a second house. I want to ask the Council for Development and Reconstruction, what kind of lie, what kind of magic can move these ruins? The area is 400 meters long. Where can it go?
Many Bistri residents will lose land to make way for the dam. And the amount of compensation the government is offering simply isn't enough, says landowner Marie-Dominique Farhat.
We're going to lose 250 to 280 tons of strawberries per year. We will lose everything that we cultivated, such as avocados and kiwi fruit. And they will give us a compensation equivalent to only 2 or 3 years of harvest.
Farhat's mother, 91-year-old Lodi Awad, has lived here since the 1950s. And she says that while the dam will bring water, it will come at the cost of agriculture.
What is lacking here in Lebanon is agricultural land to feed the population, which is growing. It's true that many Lebanese are scattered around the world, but many of them are here and need to eat. They need vegetables, fruit, of course, fruit trees, olive trees and pine trees. If they take all this land, well, it's a pity. It's a real pity.
Yet the government maintains the dam is critical to solving the country's water crisis.
Coffee?
Eli Moussali is the engineer overseeing the construction of the Bistri Dam. I meet him at his office at the Council for Development and Reconstruction in the heart of Beirut, next door to Parliament. The Bistri Dam, he says, will provide water to the most densely populated area of Lebanon, Greater Beirut.
The focus is to bring water for Greater Beirut area, which is so large. Approximately 40% of the Lebanese population lives in this area. With areas with the poor level are so high, like the suburbs of Beirut and so on. And the deficit of the water supply is so high, plus the quality is very poor as well and so on.
The government's own environmental impact assessment for the Bistri Dam from 2014 confirms two major fault lines lie close to the site of the proposed dam. But Moussali adds that the government believes the construction zone is safe, and that any future earthquakes will pose no risk to the dam.
The dam is designed to accommodate the maximum credible earthquake, which is equivalent to a scale of 8 on Richter scale. And then the studies were done according to the best practice, international practice.
Though it declined an interview, the World Bank told DW in a written statement.
By providing increased access to potable water in the Greater Beirut Mount Lebanon region, including to the southern Beirut neighborhoods, where over 460,000 people live on less than $4 a day, the project strengthens Lebanon's ability to reduce poverty while also boosting shared prosperity. The Bistri Dam is designed in accordance with a state-of-the-art seismic hazard assessment.
On the outskirts of Beirut, in an old house, is converted office space of the NGO Terre Liban. It's part of the Lebanon Eco Movement, like 60 other local environmental NGOs. The movement is trying to convince the World Bank to back out of the Bistri Dam, or at least conduct more research on the seismic and environmental consequences of the dam. Environmental activist Roland Nassour is the author of a report detailing the environmental risks of the Bistri Dam.
Bistri Dam will actually inundate a unique riparian ecosystem and a variety of species. A minimum of 2 million square meters of forest will be wiped out, including pine woods, olive and orange orchards, and others, obstructing movement of migratory water bird species also, changing turbidity sediment levels to which species and ecosystems are adapted, modifying water quality and flow patterns downstream. Also, it will affect the fish movement along the river. So it's a whole ecosystem that will severely impacted.
The Lebanon Eco Movement believes that an important reservoir of water built on an active fault line can actually aggravate seismic activity. The group has sent two reports to the World Bank in which they detail their concerns. For Nassour, an alternative to building a dam would be to invest in exploiting underground water in Lebanon.
About 65% of Lebanon's water resources are actually underground. They are held in underground water basins. That's why we believe that a water development strategy should consider the investment in the underground water.
Differences of opinion evidently remain. Despite opposition from locals and environmentalists, construction of the Bisri Dam looks set to go ahead.
This is the olive trees, eggplants.
Back in the valley, some locals like Usama Saad won't stop looking after their orchards. His 12 hectares of land, bought by his father 60 years ago, hold a special place in his heart.
I will see if I can find another land in this beautiful place. I don't think I can reach for a good place like this.
Suniva Rose, DW, Bisri, Lebanon.
You're listening to Living Planet with me, Charlotte Lomas, coming to you from DW Studios in Bonn. Still to come on the show, what's behind the mysterious dolphin deaths in Bulgaria's Black Sea?
Hundreds of dead dolphins have been washed ashore, but a maximum of 5% of all dead dolphins actually make it to the Bulgarian coast. That means thousands of others remain in the sea.
That's coming up. But first, we head to the famous Dead Sea, a salt lake some 400 metres below sea level, nestled between Jordan, Israel and the Palestinian territories. Every year, hundreds of thousands of tourists flock to swim in its buoyant waters and to enjoy the health benefits owed to the water's unique chemical properties. But for how much longer? The lake is disappearing at an alarming rate of 1 metre per year, largely due to the diversion of incoming water from the Jordan River in the north. Finding a way to sustain the sea will be a major challenge in the years to come. But a joint project by Jordan and Israel offers some hope. It wants to direct water from Jordan's Red Sea to the Dead Sea using a pipeline. Environmentalists, though, say the pipeline could destabilize the lake's sensitive chemistry. Anna Orsius went to find out more, and Sarah Steffen presents her report.
The Dead Sea shimmers in the sun as a shroud of mist stretches over the water. The path down to the lakeshore is steep and long. It's a narrow path with many stairs. And every year, more of these steps become visible as the Dead Sea disappears bit by bit. Water levels at the lowest point on Earth are falling at an alarming rate.
Every year, the water recedes by a meter.
That's Mohammed. He's working as a pool attendant in one of the hotels here by the Dead Sea, just like his father did before him. A few years ago, the water was up to here, he says, as he points up the hill.
My father told me the water was coming up to the street when he used to work here. In the past 20 years, the levels have decreased by about 30 meters.
On both sides of the path, huge terraced areas reveal what was once underwater. But now it resembles a barren landscape like that on the moon. If nothing is done soon, scientists think the Dead Sea could be gone by as soon as 2050. It might not disappear entirely. There may be a small remainder of the lake which retains its extremely high levels of salt, but ultimately the famous lake would just turn into a dead pond. The River Jordan supplies the Dead Sea with water, but the need for water in Israel and Jordan has risen dramatically. For centuries, one of the great waterways of the Middle East, the River Jordan has now been reduced to a small, dirty trickle over the past few decades. Environmentalists blame Israel, Jordan, and Syria for causing extensive damage to the river's ecosystem. About 90% of its water is diverted into reservoirs or man-made channels. What's left trickles into the Dead Sea. That's far from enough, says Christoph Kottmeier, professor of meteorology at Karlsruhe Institute of Technology.
The Dead Sea doesn't have any reliable feeder streams anymore, just a little bit. The evaporation levels are very high, and that's part of the reason that the lake keeps getting smaller.
Kottmeier heads a research project of the Helmholtz Association by the Dead Sea. If the lake were to disappear, it would not only be a huge loss for scientists and tourists, but first and foremost for the people who live there. Falling water levels will have potentially catastrophic consequences for the already dry region, says Jordanian environmentalist Rauf Dabas.
Its pressure on the surface of the land keeps the upstream springs from staying up there. As the level of the Dead Sea drops, so does the streams go further down into more salinity. So we lose even more water as the level of the Dead Sea drops, because the table, water table, is also dropping with it all along the Jordan Valley.
In addition to a lack of water, these upstream springs also wash out the salt in the soil. As the salty water recedes, fresh underground water moves in and dissolves the salt layers below the surface. This leads to the creation of huge dangerous sinkholes, which could collapse any minute. If this continues, the Dead Sea may soon start living up to its name.
It's a rampant problem. There are thousands of such holes. They go very deep. Farms have closed down. There are streets with such holes. Even today, you can't go to certain areas anymore.
Like any large body of water, the Dead Sea also helps regulate the temperature during hot summers by absorbing the heat from the air and releasing it again in winter. The Dead Sea plays a crucial role in shaping the region's climate. Dabas says it's high time to act.
Scientists have also envisioned that if it continues to do so, it will last another 50 years. So we need to do something about this.
But there's an idea on how to save the Dead Sea. A joint project between Jordan and Israel known as the Red Sea-Dead Sea Water Conveyance, or the Two Seas Canal. It would see the construction of a pipeline which would transport water from the Red Sea in Jordan's south into the Dead Sea. It's a huge undertaking. The water from the south would first be pumped into desalinization plants. Some of that fresh water will then be passed on to Israel, which in turn delivers water to Jordan's north, where water demand has risen drastically, especially due to the influx of Syrian refugees. The Palestinian territories are also set to get some of this water. What's left in the desalinization plants, the highly salty brine, is then mixed with normal seawater before being pumped some 180 kilometers via pipelines into the Dead Sea. Hydroelectric power plants will be installed along the way as a means of generating electricity. But environmentalists have voiced their concerns about the project. The introduction of a new kind of water could throw the Dead Sea's sensitive chemical equilibrium off balance, as well as its ecosystem. Environmentalist Dabas thinks we don't yet understand the risks involved.
This has never been attempted around the world. It's a first of its kind where you're taking fresh seawater, desalinating it, and putting the desalinated brine, the concentrate, into the sea. And at that level, and with the importance and sensitivity of the Dead Sea, you have to be careful of calcification of the water. What's going to happen to this water when it reacts with the Dead Sea water? Will it turn into calcium salts and crystallize and create a problem of itself? Would it change the temperature of that sea and create more humidity, less humidity? We don't know.
However, Jordan's authorities say it's unlikely that any of these changes would happen. Here's Jordan's Minister for Water and Irrigation, Hazim Al-Nasser.
We started doing some studies because there has been some concern from some environmentalists. Therefore, through the World Bank, we addressed all the issues related to the environment of the Dead Sea as a result of the implementation of the Red Sea project. All the studies that the ministry did in cooperation with regional parties as well as the World Bank concluded that we can transfer up to 400 million cubic meters per year without any negative impact on the Dead Sea itself or the surrounding environment. On the contrary, by implementing this project, we will save the Dead Sea from disappearance.
The first water from the project is expected to flow into the Dead Sea in 2024. But can the Dead Sea be saved by this scheme? Scientist Kottmeyer and environmentalist Dabas remain skeptical.
It won't save the Dead Sea. It will only slow down the process.
We're just delaying the inevitable. We cannot just stand against this project because a do-nothing is unacceptable. So something has to be done.
It's a truly special place with unique scenery and a unique flora and fauna. It has potential for tourism, for instance. If you give that up, you lose something that's unique to the world.
Sarah Steffen presented that report by Anna Orsius.
Flocking to the sea, crowds of people wait for me. Seagulls scavenge, still ice cream. Worries vanish within my dream. I lift my soul.
From the Dead Sea to the Black Sea, we turn to Bulgaria, where in recent years hundreds of dolphins have been washing up dead along its coastlines. Experts say the dolphins get caught in fishing nets that have been put out illegally in order to catch a valuable species of flatfish that can be sold at a high price. But the fishing industry is not solely to blame for the dwindling dolphin numbers, as Andrea Baer has been finding out. Natalie Muller presents her report.
The waves crash against the coast of the Black Sea here in Varna, where hundreds of dolphins have washed ashore in recent years, their fins covered in cuts and their stomachs full of bits of rope from trawling nets. In 2016 alone, environmentalists found 400 dead dolphins. The mammals get trapped in nets that are often hundreds of metres long and used for illegal sea-bottom trawling. The dolphins then drown in a matter of minutes. Atanas Rusev of the environmental protection organisation Save Coral says there are more than he can count.
Hundreds of dead dolphins have been washed ashore. But our scientist, Vasil Galabov, proved via simulations that a maximum of 5% of all dead dolphins actually make it to the Bulgarian coast. That means thousands of others remain in the sea. And these poachers know all too well that our oceans are not being patrolled at all. It's a very easy way to make a profit.
These rings of profiteers are run like the mafia, and their target is the lucrative turbot, a species of flatfish. In Turkey, you can sell 1 kilo for about 40 euros or 48 US dollars. In Bulgaria, it's about 15 euros a kilo. But illegal fishing isn't just an issue in Bulgaria. It also happens off the Romanian and Ukrainian Black Sea coasts, according to marine biologist Svetan Staniev. And while it's the main culprit killing off the three dolphin species in the Black Sea, it's definitely not the only one. He says pollution, loud underwater drillings in the sea, and climate change also add to the problem.
It's hard to say, but I think it's a mixture of things. In Bulgaria, the first mass extinction in 1989 was caused by a worm that destroyed the sense of balance in dolphins. Last year, many died on the southern coast because of the warm water temperature, up to 34 degrees Celsius. Dolphins can't cool down because they don't have sweat glands. And the reason for warm oceans is climate change.
Svetan Staniev sits in front of a huge glass pane. Behind it, a few dolphins swim back and forth. Children press their noses against the window while they wait for the show at Varna's Dolphinarium to start. Staniev joins the performance as a spectator, watching as dolphins spin balls on their noses, jump over hurdles, and race through the small pool. He knows every single dolphin here because he works as an advisor to the Dolphinarium. These dolphins are from the Caribbean, he says. By law, they aren't allowed to use dolphins from the Black Sea. They're singing, he says with a grin. He doesn't have a problem with dolphins being trained to put on performances because, he says, the sea mammals are treated well here.
You can see by the way they behave that they are healthy. They are active, move at a normal speed, and are in a good mood. If a dolphin is unwell, he'll be in a bad mood, move slowly, and he might have a fever.
Fever was the least of the problems he found when performing autopsies on the many dolphins from the Black Sea. He discovered heavy metals in their bodies, failed kidneys, and wounds in their bowels. He concluded that the animals had suffered pneumonia and heart attacks. In the mid-90s, Staniev helped with an international study and developed a conservation program to protect the sensitive sea mammals. The results, even back then, stressed that it's crucial to keep the oceans clean and outlaw illegal fishing. Last year, Bulgaria introduced a ban on fishing in dolphin areas, which is overseen by the country's fisheries authority. People who kill a dolphin are punished with a hefty fine or are even sent to jail. But environmentalist Rusev says the Bulgarian government should do more.
The Bulgarian Environment Ministry barely managed to come up with a regulation. They just ordered a freezer and performed an autopsy on one dolphin.
In the mid-60s, most of the countries in the region banned catching dolphins. But according to experts, the measure came too late. Dirty seawater also reduced the number of fish, an important food source for dolphins. And that's still a problem today. Staniev says humans are the biggest threat to the mammals.
60, 70 million years ago, dolphins left the sea to come to shore. But then humans emerged and the dolphins returned to the water. They probably thought, let's leave mankind to fight nature here and we'll drift in the water and won't have as big as a problem as we'd have on land.
It's a nice story, if it weren't for all the dead dolphins in the Black Sea.
Natalie Muller with that report by Andrea Baer. Somewhere beyond the sea, somewhere waiting for me, my lover stands on golden sand. And that wraps up the show for today. Our program was produced with the help of Eliana Ghiducci and Thomas Schmidt. You can listen to Living Planet anytime on iTunes and SoundCloud, or you can find us on Facebook and Twitter at DW Environment. I'm Charlotte Lomas. Catch you next week. If I could fly like birds on high, then straight to her arms I'd go sailing. It's far beyond a star, it's near beyond the moon. I know beyond a doubt, my heart will lead me there soon. We'll meet beyond the shore, we'll kiss just as before. Happy we'll be beyond the sea, and never again I'll go sailing. My heart will lead me there soon. We'll meet, I know we'll meet beyond the shore. We'll kiss just as before. Happy we'll be beyond the sea, and never again I'll go sailing. No more sailing.
so long.